Liberties is a journal that understands the past never stays past. Each quarterly issue features thoughtfully written essays that connect history, politics, and the big ideas shaping our future. Whether it's liberalism in crisis, the roots of populism, or how memory shapes identity, Liberties offers timeless insight from today's most fearless writers. Come for the past, stay for the future of thought. LibertiesJournal.com.
Good morning, everybody. I finally got this audio stuff figured out. If you listen to my show on Wednesday with Miss Sabrina Salvati, which was a very, very fun show. Her and I come from pretty different political backgrounds, but I felt like it was a really good conversation. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I listened to her quite a bit. We, like I said, we disagree on a few issues, but it was enjoyable. But long story short, I finally got this audio stuff figured out, and I actually think my audio sounds a little bit better than it did before after the last Sunday coffee, where we kind of found out that whatever the power supply or the mixer, I'm looking at it right now. It's literally a Behringer mixer sitting in the cabinet right beside my desk here. As soon as I found out that thing took a crap and I listened back to the audio, I apologize. it was pretty bad. It's pretty staticky. So hopefully you guys can all forgive me for having such terrible audio quality. But happy Sunday. Happy Father's Day, Jack. Good morning to you. Or it's 14 hours before or after. Good evening. Good morning. Whatever it is for you. I wanted to talk about political labels today. I woke up this morning and saw that my friend Pete Quinones had ratioed me on Twitter last night. And, you know, there's no bad blood or anything like that. But just as we kind of move closer to the election and kind of further away from the old times, I guess, what would you look back decades and decades ago to what was considered right wing back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 50s, 60s, anything like that, compared to what it is today? It's just crazy how our world, political dialogue and all that continues to shift. It seems like leftward, but I mean, it just kind of depends on how you define these things and how people want to look at it, because everybody's a little bit different when it comes to this stuff. And I find the language barrier isn't always necessarily helpful. And as always, I got my coffee with me. The first sip was absolutely fantastic. I've been on a caramel kick lately, but I guess I should do all my shilling right now. Afterwards, after this show, I will be on with Post Zero. We're going to talk about our dads and stuff, which is going to be a lot of fun. Make sure you hit the links below to find myself, what I got going on, all that good stuff, as well as Fox and Sons coffee, the coffee that I always drink. I'm not drinking it right now. I have my Death Wish because I just got some of it yesterday and I really, really wanted some Death Wish coffee. But yeah, Fox and Sons coffee, use code Kyle at checkout. These streams are made possible by our great friend Stephen Fox, who's been on the show a couple times. And also go to tigerfitness.com where they have a Father's Day sale, $40 off $200 or more. And I think it's $20 off $100 and less. So that's a pretty damn good sale. Go get yourself all your supplements, the stuff that I use every single day. In fact, I had their orange mango pre-workout this morning. And that's probably one of my favorite flavors ever. So I think I've done enough shilling. Let's get into it, guys. And one more time, good morning. I do see Jack dropped in the chat, and I was supposed to have Rob from his show Red Evening, and he has his own channels while Rob says I was going to have him on, but I just completely forgot to reach out to him. I had an insanely busy day yesterday. I worked yesterday and then went out to dinner with my dad, which was a good time. But I wanted to talk about labels because this is something that kind of comes up frequently within our circles. And I feel like it's necessary because there's like almost a language barrier. So when we're talking about political labels, it just a lot of this seems to be down to how each person subjectively defines what right wing, left wing, libertarian, whatever means. And It almost seems like an unnecessary fight at this point. I know when I had Brandon Harnish and Pete on a couple months, that might have even been like a year back. I don't even remember, but I don't remember what episode it was, but it was a good show. I had a lot of fun because those guys are just awesome. And Brandon's been on the show a bunch, and I like talking strategy a lot with him because he's a local guy. He doesn't have a podcast, so he's a little bit removed from this whole world, but still kind of participates in it in a way. We had discussed whether right wing was a term worth using, and I'm of two minds on this because I see their argument that, like, if you are explicitly right wing, then you gatekeep progressivism, which I don't know how strong of a point that is, but there is merit to it. I don't know how much merit, because I think most people consider the Republican Party to be right wing, but if you would go back 50, 60 years ago, they would be incredibly progressive by their standards, but by today's standards, they're right wing. I heard Michael Sartain on, I think it was the Danza Project, where he said that just as we get more and more technologically advanced, that we move more and more towards, as we get more and more industrialized, we tend to shift more and more left, which is very, very interesting to think about. Good morning, Trey. I hope you're doing well, man. Personally, you should only concern yourself with your self-attributed labels, and you should police what you mean by that label. I agree with this. I agree with this completely, but the problem is that when interacting with people, if I were to just come up and say that I'm a libertarian, then some people will associate that with the dude who took his clothes off, who was like a self-identified Marxist at the Libertarian Party event. I get it. That's completely understandable. When you say you're a Republican, then some people are going to assume that you're Lindsey Graham. If you were to say you're a Democrat, people are going to assume you're Joe Biden. And I understand all of those. And I think there's merit to saying all those things. but when you want to communicate with other people in the world, and maybe you want to add some nuance to the way that they're thinking, then labels can hurt or help. So, like, personally, I identify more as like a right-wing libertarian because I have very socially conservative values. I have a much more, whatever it is, low time preference, I think it is, where I think that you should delay gratification. Should. I know Jack's going to be mad at me for that. But like, when it comes to getting things in your life, delaying gratification ultimately yields you large results because, like, when it comes to exercise, right? You could easily go right now, like I could dump heavy cream in this coffee right now and put a whole ass load of sugar in it, and it would taste really good. I could enjoy that right now, and I'd get a ton of calories, and it would be awesome. It would taste good, but it's not, productive towards my body composition goals. So therefore, I go for sugar-free creamer, sugar-free syrups, stuff lower in calories, so that way I can maintain a body composition that I want, but also enjoy the things that taste good. But more to your point, Trey, is that, like, what's important when you're talking about labels is that you should have kind of some sense of frame, which is like, you know, this is the hill that I'm dying on, as in, like, these are the way that I'm defining these terms. And when I had Dave Smith on, we kind of talked about this a little bit. Like, he believes, and I still believe as well, that the term libertarian is worth defending. And part of I was a little bit refreshed recently. The guy who's going to be working on my, okay, so we agree essentially here that, yeah, you set the frame. And this is kind of the perspective that I think people, when they're talking about things in language and having conversations with people, that you should try to set it. Like, I'm a libertarian in regards like Ron Paul, Dave Smith, Thomas Massey. Like, these are the people that I'm referring to when I say libertarian. Rand Paul, even, maybe. That's what I mean when I say libertarian. And I think, like, generally, if you lead with that, most people that, like, were interacting with Trey will probably say, oh, okay, then, like, we're aligned on the vast, vast majority of issues. If you don't operate in your frame, you're always in someone else's frame. Yeah, exactly. I was talking to the guy who's going to be doing my back porch roof here, and he's my family's plumber, and he does, obviously, like, some home improvement stuff. And I just handed him an ass load of cash, all stacks and stacks and stacks of 20s, because he's going to be doing the roof for my house. And I was a little bit refreshing to hear him say, and like, I don't talk politics with people unless they bring it up first, then like we'll engage in a conversation about it. But he's like, man, you know, I'm feeling more and more libertarian lately. And I was like, oh, That's so nice to hear. We weren't talking politics or anything like that. He just said, oh, I'm feeling more libertarian. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's cool. Like, and so we engaged with that a little bit. And he was like, well, I just see all like this money they're taking out. And like my roads are shit. It costs so much for me to do my job. It costs so much for me to pay for stuff and this and that. I feel really libertarian. I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. When you think about libertarian in terms of like limited government, less taxes, that's good. I like that. When you talk about libertarian in terms of like socially libertarian, I think that it doesn't look good because I think a lot of people tend to look at libertarianism in a cultural lens as like freedom from consequences of your actions and free to act like an asshole, a degenerate. You know, you can go lay naked and swing your dick in your front yard if you want to because it's your property. Yeah, just end the state, bro. That's what people say all the time. And I listened to the debate between Alan Dershowitz and Glenn Greenwald, which was fantastic. It's really funny listening to Gene Epstein yell at people because he's like this little old dude. Just your question's been asked. Your question's been asked. Alan Dershowitz made a good point where he said we live in the world of like insufferable, worse, and not so bad. And as much as I don't like Alan Dershowitz, he's kind of right. You can't, you know, as much as we would all like to say end the state tomorrow and then live in Ancapistan or whatever. I don't know how much I believe that anymore. I think it's an ideal state, but I think that you need to have a very, very cohesive group of people, as in people that have values that are very closely aligned. You couldn't have a socially degenerate culture. And this is where like Jacob Winograd and I agree a lot. And if you didn't see the show that him and I did where Andrew Wilson came in as well, I thought it was a pretty enjoyable show. We didn't get to the topics I exactly wanted to get to. It kind of turned into a debate between Jacob and Andrew. I kind of checked out of that, but I still think you guys should check it out because I think Andrew is a good check on libertarians and it gives us something more to think about. Eliminate the state, but you should follow your HOA rules at it. Yeah, pretty much. And that's kind of what I always think about. It's like you're kind of volunteering into a state. you're going to devolve to something because you're going to need some sort of order and you're going to need some sort of hierarchy because there are some people that don't want to be free. There are some people that don't want to take on the responsibility of governing themselves enough to maintain order and maintain that freedom. That's why I think a lot of people more in like our sphere look more towards like Hans Hermann Hoppe as like his form of libertarianism being correct. I got my bad monkey mug. I think I dropped this on a dish or something like that. And that's why there's a little chip missing out of it. But yeah, like I think that's why a lot of the only way to advance a libertarian order is to be more right wing and have similar values shared amongst those people. Like when I look at the Chase Oliver campaign and Chase Oliver and what he stands for, I'm like, man, that is just not the libertarianism that I represent at all. And like I said, Pete ratioed me last night when I had said I don't jump to the label right wing. And you know, maybe I should pull up that tweet because that will kind of encapsulate and you guys can kind of see what I'm referring to here. Give me a minute. My followers on Twitter have been all over the place. Keep scrolling. And the one thing that Trey had pointed out was that girl who broke the internet by saying my friends are dating a bunch of broke ass niggas. And then all of a sudden she just magically goes viral. Everybody's sharing the video and everybody wants to talk about the girl who said the N word on the internet. I don't believe this shit is genuine. Like nobody just pops up like that. Like they're way, 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 way too ironic. So let me pull up this screen here. This page Sneeko updates, who I just find Sneeko's just kind of like a retard. Had posted this picture, created people do. Yes, exactly. And you know what's funny? Your tweet where you said she'll be counter-signaling you within a week was exactly it. She literally said that because she said something about you should thank single mothers for your right wing or something like that. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. But So I tweeted this out, and once again, Pete did have a good reply to it. I said, this is why I don't jump on to the label right-wing. Donald Trump, Nikki Haley, Lindsey Graham, and now Sneaker are all considered right-wing to the average person. Clown-pilled. And then Pete, yeah, I got 45 and he got 112, so I'll give the W to Pete. Why do you care what the average person thinks? They think COVID was a pandemic, which makes them retarded. And you know what's funny is I completely agree with Pete. Me and him are 100% in agreement there, where I agree that I really don't think COVID was like that big of a deal. It was a big deal because people made it that big of a deal, but I don't think like the sickness itself was that big of a deal. And he could totally flip that on me, and he would be right to say that, well, you know, maybe the average person thinks of the libertarian as the dude who streaked on stage. He'd be right. He would be absolutely right. Well, you've become a Chase Oliver. But yeah, like the people who are cloud chasers, they essentially fill a vacuum because they're looking for something to make them go viral. Like if you look at that Eliza Blue, who blocked me on both my Twitter accounts, so I can't even see what she says anymore. She had been looking for her thing, and her thing just so happened to be child trafficking. And she said she was trafficked because people used her pictures or something like that. And then she had all these music videos where she was being all lewd. And like, I don't care about that. I really don't. But you can't say you were trafficked when you were voluntarily doing a lot of this stuff and you were looking for clout. I'm just saying, man. I am just saying. But we all kind of care what somebody thinks of us. And it's not like, I think, and this may be being a little bit autistic about it, but like you shouldn't care what people who already don't like you think, right? People who do like you, you want to maintain a good reputation with them. And this is kind of what I'm speaking to, is that like, if I'm talking to some of my boomer mentality coworkers, not like actual boomers, but like my boomer coworkers, when we talk about political stuff, I want them to respect what I have to say in my perspective, because yes, yes, exactly that. Caring what your enemies thinks is gay. It's perfect. I'll have to tweet that out and I'll credit you here in a minute. But yeah, like you shouldn't care what people who hate you think about you, or people who aren't open to your ideas. People who are open to your ideas and to hearing what you want to say, or what you were saying. Sorry, I don't know why I stumbled on that so much. But you want to maintain a good reputation with those people. And I've spoke about this a lot on the podcast, where like you want to have like friendship and leadership capital with people where they trust in what you say because they trust you as a person. So like when you talk about a political issue, if they don't like you, then they're never going to listen to you. They don't care what you think. If you have a good friendship and a relationship with a person, then more than likely they care about what you have to say and they care about your perspective. So like I was talking to one of the people that plays in a band that my band plays with quite a bit, my buddy Paul. Really, really good dude, but he is a pretty boomer mentality kind of guy, and a big Trump supporter, which I have zero problems with that. But like, I had told him, I'm like, well, you know, when Trump was president, he passed some anti-Semitic speech laws when he was in. And he was literally, he just finished telling me about when he was in California, friends coming up to him and warning him about the gay J mob, essentially, which whether that's true or not, I don't know. I'm not here to equivocate upon that. I just don't know. And this was back 30, 40 years ago. And it was kind of funny because I don't think he ever heard that before, and he knows that I'm not some deranged left winger. So he was like, oh man, no, like, I don't like that. I care what he thinks, 'cause he's a good dude. He's a business owner. He's somebody respectable in the community, in our music community, and like the overall just like community of where I live. So having him care what I think about is important. And same deal with my bass player. You know, he owns three businesses. Of course I give a fuck what he thinks. But like the rando on Twitter with the anime profile picture who's calling my wife a mid and saying I'm a cunt or something like that, like, I don't care what that person thinks. Why would I? They're not going to, you know, contribute to my livelihood or make my life better in any capacity at all. So, you know what? Let me run an ad here real quick and we will get right back into it. All right, guys, we are going to take a quick break from the show to tell you about the show's sponsor. We are now brought to you by Fox & Sons Coffees. You can see right here, I got the Den Blend Dark. Really enjoy that. I've been drinking a lot of their Brazil Honey Prep. right here. As you can hear, there's not a lot of beans left in it because I've been drinking it quite a bit. Just to tell you a little bit about Fox and Sons, why I support them and why you should too, is that Stephen had started the company up in Michigan to help teach his son about entrepreneurship. I'm all about that, and I do firmly believe that in order to spread liberty in our lifetimes, we have to support those who support similar values as us. And Stephen does support all the same libertarian values that I bring and talk about on the show a lot. So go to foxandsons.com, use code Kyle at checkout to get 15% off of orders $25 or more. And there's always free shipping whenever you place an order that is more than $37.99. Find their coffee absolutely fantastic, and I'm sure you will too. So one more time, go to foxandsons.com, use code Kyle at checkout to get yourself a little discount. Let them know I sent you and support the coffee that supports you. All right, guys, thanks. Back to the show. I am all out. So hopefully you're drinking your coffee with me. I just finished. I had, I know this is going to be gay, but I had the Starbucks Zero Sugar Creamer Caramel with a little bit of salted caramel syrup and chocolate caramel electrolytes. And fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. But you know what? Maybe I should pull this up and we'll start kind of reading through this article. I got two different articles pulled up to just kind of talk about political identities. Stage. There we go. Why does it always do that? I'll zoom in a little bit because I see that that might be a little bit hard to see. So this is from Close Up Washington, D.C. I don't know anything about this website. So if they're gay, let me know in the comments or, you know, message me. Understanding ideological labels written in February 20th in 2020 by Scott Wilson, whoever the hell that is. During campaigns and elections, candidates use political labels such as liberal, moderate, progressive, conservative, and libertarian to position themselves in relation to each other as a shorthand for their worldviews and policy references. Excuse me. This presidential election cycle features candidates from across a wider political spectrum than most elections in recent years. In the United States, we often discuss a left-right political spectrum that might look something like this. A socialist, progressive, liberal, moderate, conservative, libertarian, autocratic. I don't think that really nails it perfectly, but I guess it's loosely useful. This political ideology spectrum is confusing for several reasons. First, the far right includes both small government libertarian, autocratic, authoritarian political beliefs. Second, the ideological labels such as socialist and libertarian are not commonly used and understood in the United States, although that is changing. This post offers some resources to help teachers and students explore political beliefs and values. Our debates in the United States take place within a small slice of the available political ideologies. To help your students explore the full range of ideas and to see how our political debates compare to those in other countries, consider exploring the political compass created by Pace News and journalist Wayne Brittenden. So to kind of speak about that, yeah, I've never heard anybody label themselves an autocrat. And honestly, like, I know that word, but I don't know exactly what that means. So you know what? Why don't we share this tab instead? Autocrat. Relating to a ruler who has absolute power. Okay. Well, I mean, that kind of makes sense then. That's kind of what I thought it would mean, but I wasn't exactly sure. Yeah, I don't know anybody who really labels themselves an autocrat. I think the reason why they put that in there is just to kind of give light to authoritarianism, essentially. And I don't know. I don't know anybody that really labels themselves that. Oh. As I get older, I'm starting to sneeze a lot more, and I don't like it. I'll be 30 this year.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Introducing the Star Patrol Spotlight, the most intense flashlight you've ever seen. Compared to two car headlights, the Star Patrol shines up to four times as bright.
That's bright!
Illuminate objects up to a half mile away, even from the top of a skyscraper. The Star Patrol easily lights up buildings from across the skyline.
That's insanely bright!
Push Turbo Boost for a crazy bright boost that's 100 times brighter for 30,000 candelas of mega bright light.
What? That's insanely bright!
With 10 illumination modes, the Star Patrol is a spotlight, floodlight, emergency light, and more. Take care of all your lighting needs with one Star Patrol. Don't settle for dull flashlights. If the Star Patrol isn't the brightest flashlight you've ever seen, return it for a full refund. Go to GetStarPatrol.com for your free turbo boost, plus free shipping and a money-back guarantee. That's GetStarPatrol.com. GetStarPatrol.com.
So I don't know, maybe that whole thing about your allergies changing every 7 years is true. Monarchist, maybe not autocrat. Well, my understanding of monarchy is that you have one central ruler. I don't know if autocracy is necessarily dissimilar to that. Additional resources, our political value lessons help students understand. Okay, so they have a little graph here, which they consider scaling of candidates. I don't understand how they label this. I wish they had... Does it say on here? No, it doesn't say. They have Aldrich McKelvey. Okay, you know, I'm going to have to look this up now. God damn it. I should have came a little bit more prepared. Aldrich McKelvey scaling. No unique solution. God damn it. I just need a Cliff Notes version of this. I'm so sorry, guys. I should be more professional in this. Right now, if you're listening, I'm trying to find how they use this McKelvey scaling thing. Key point, collected notes, PDF. You know, maybe I could zoom in on this. So I will share this tab instead. We'll read through this real quick just so that way we understand. Aldrich McKelvey scaling method is designed to correct differential item functioning and survey respondent placements of external stimuli ordered rating scales, such as the ideological positions of political parties. And in doing so, it allows for recovery of corrected stimuli positions and by extension, respondent positions or ideal points along the same scales. Differential item functioning can be understood as survey respondents perceiving or understanding the scale in fundamentally different ways, thus leading to different placements of the stimuli. Aldrich McKelvey scaling has sometimes also been discussed in the context of rationalization bias, where respondents have a tendency to shift the placements of parties where they dislike away from themselves and the placements of parties they like towards themselves. However, it is the only form of much more recent adaptation that rationalization bias is explicitly included in the model, although Aldrich McKelvey scaling remains robust in the case of estimating stimuli positions and reasonably robust case of estimating respondent positions. Wow, that is a lot of words. I know I sound like a retard. But basically, they're putting, like, if you look at this scale, I'll have to zoom in quite a bit. I think what they're basically trying to display is just like how they scale Donald Trump in the Republican Party, where you see like Tulsi Gabbard is closer to the Republican Party than like Elizabeth Warren is, probably because of some of her views on like war or something like that. I don't exactly understand this scaling and I would have to read a lot more into it. And I don't want to bore you guys with me trying to understand this graph. But I think Trump kind of represents a little bit of like a return to the right wing. Like a lot of people feel a lot more comfortable identifying as right wing with Donald Trump kind of at the head, who is an improvement upon Mitt Romney, make no mistake. And I think any libertarian and any right leaning person would probably agree with that. I think that's a fair assessment, even from somebody who I am a very, very sharp critic of Donald Trump. But I think it's fair to say that that's an improvement from the, you know, traditionally minded neoconservative and regular right wing, if you will, kind of Republican Party. So let's see about this. This is the Pew Research Center. Geez, yeah, this is quite a bit. So, fuck it. We'll read through it. Stop sharing. So, let me exit out of this. Beyond red versus blue, the political typology, even in a polarized area, deep divisions in both partisan coalitions. Partisan polarization remains dominant, seemingly unalterable condition of American politics. Republicans and Democrats agree on very little, and when they do, it often is in the shared belief that they have little in common. I know Ron Paul always said that, like, they agree on war and stuff like that. It's kind of true, for the most part. I mean, we even see that exemplified through the, you know, more recent foreign aid bill. And now you see Biden trying to run towards Trump on immigration because he realized that it's not very palatable to have a completely open border. Yet the gulf that separates Republicans and Democrats sometimes obscures the divisions and the diversity. Exit out of that. Diversity of views that exist within both partisan coalitions. And the fact that many Americans do not fit easily into either one. And I think when we talk about political differences and politics, people generally kind of like, okay, well, on net, Donald Trump more represents me. On net, Biden more represents me. I think that's where most people kind of decide to vote. And then if you're me or a lot of other libertarians, then you say, hey, maybe the Libertarian Party represents my views more. And if you're a little bit more practical, which is totally fair, and I don't, you know, begrudge people for doing this, Donald Trump is closer to me than Joe Biden, so therefore I'm going to vote for Trump. I voted Libertarian or Republican my entire life. I've never voted for a Democrat. But for the last two presidential elections, which are only two that I voted in, I voted for Joe Jorgensen and Gary Johnson. And I voted for Republicans where I couldn't vote for Libertarians. This year, I'm just not voting. But Republicans are divided on some principles long associated with the GOP, an affinity for business and corporations, support for low taxes, and opposition to abortion, which that's not even clear across the board, opposition to abortion amongst Republicans. Democrats face substantial internal differences as well, some that are longstanding, such as the importance of religion in society. Others more recent, for example, while Democrats widely share the goal of combating racial inequality in the United States, they differ on whether systemic change is required to achieve that goal. It's kind of funny that you don't really even hear about that stuff anymore. Like the specifically racism, like you hear more about the gender stuff than you do necessarily about race. Now, when a cop kills a black person, then you hear about it a lot. But these intra-party disagreements present multiple challenges for both parties. They complicate the already difficult task of governing in a divided nation. In addition, to succeed politically, the parties must maintain the loyalty of highly politically engaged, more ideological voters, while also attracting support among less engaged voters, many of them younger, with weaker partisan ties. And I think this is where Trump going to the Libertarian Party convention is a big win for him, because he's able to appeal to a lot more moderates. And if you listen to the speech, which I actually thought was a good speech, like he appealed to property rights and everything, I actually kind of enjoyed it. He's looking to appeal to more moderates. He's looking to appeal to the libertarians. He's looking to appeal to people who aren't necessarily hard right wing. So like, there's going to be that faction of Trump supporters who's going to vote for Trump no matter what. There's going to be that faction of, you know, Republicans who are a little bit on the fence who think like, he's probably the best that we got, so I'm voting for him. And then there's probably another faction of people who are like, I'm apathetic. I could vote for him. I could vote for the Libertarian. I could vote for RFK. And I think him going to the Libertarian convention wins a lot more of those people over. I don't think Biden really, I think Biden pulls more to moderates that just think that Trump is just madness and insanity and that he's the cause of all the ridiculousness that we're seeing today. Although I think they would be wrong about that. This is a consequence of the government getting bigger and bigger and bigger in this culture war that's being inflamed. He's just a very, very large and understandable symptom of everything that's going on. Where was I? These intra-party, no, I already read that. Pew Research's new political typology provides a roadmap to today's fractured political landscape. It segments the public into 9 distinct groups based on analysis of their attitudes and values. The study is primarily based on a survey of 10,221 adults conducted July 8th to 18th, 2021. It also draws from several additional interviews with these respondents conducted since January 2020. This is the center's eighth political typology since 1987, but it differs from earlier such studies in several important ways. It is the first typology conducted on Pew Research Center's nationally representative American Trends panel, which provides the benefit of a large sample size and the ability to include a wealth of other political data for the analysis, including the center's validated voter study. The four Democratic-oriented typology groups highlight the party's racial and ethnic diversity, as well as the unwieldy nature of the current Democratic coalition. For complete descriptions of all nine typologies, see groups, blah, 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 blah. They include two very different groups of liberal Democrats, progressive left, and establishment liberals. Progressive left, the only majority white non-Hispanic group of Democrats, which is kind of funny, have very liberal views on virtually every issue and support far-reaching changes to address racial injustice and expand the social safety net. It's kind of funny that they mentioned majority white, because you would think that because they stand so much for, you know, minority groups and the oppressed groups, that they would have a little bit more in there. But it's kind of funny how they literally mentioned it's all white people in that group. Establishment liberals, while just as liberal in many ways as the progressive left, are far less persuaded of the need for sweeping change, which I think it's weird, because, like, I don't think that necessarily encapsulates it, because there are, like, the dissident left wingers, people that I've had. Oh, okay. No, hold on. We'll get into it here. Two other Democratic aligned groups cannot be more different from each other, both demographically in their relationship and in their relationship to the party. Democratic mainstays, largest Democratic oriented group, as well as the oldest on average, the unshakable Democratic loyalists, and have a moderate tilt on some issues. The outsider left, the youngest typology group, voted overwhelmingly for Joe Biden a year ago and are very liberal in most of their views. But they're deeply frustrated with the political system, including the Democratic Party and its leaders. I think this is the group that, me personally, I have the most inroads with. Like, we don't agree on a lot of issues. I mean, that's clear if you followed me for any period of time, that we do not agree on this kind of stuff. But, like, I would put Misty Winston, Sabby Sabs, Nick from the Revolutionary Blackout Network, apologies. People I've had on this show, I would say I have the most inroads with them. Like, we agree on anti-imperialism and how bad the Democratic Party is. The four Republican-oriented groups include three groups of conservatives. Faith and flag conservatives are intensely conservative in all realms. They're far more likely than other typology groups to say government policy should support religious values and compromise in its politics. It's just selling out in what you believe. And I would say, like, that's the Andrew Wilson, essentially. Committed conservatives are also express conservative views across the board, but with somewhat softer edge, particularly on issues of immigration and America's place in the world. Populist right, who have far less formal education than most other typology groups and are among the most likely to live in rural areas, highly critical of both immigrants and major U.S. corporations. I think that's kind of where a lot of, like, the Dave Smith, Ron Paul libertarians, and then obviously Trump supporters kind of identify. And I think there are a lot of Trump supporters in both of the above as well. Ambivalent right, the youngest and least conservative GOP-aligned group, hold conservative views about the size of government, the economic system, and the issues of race and gender, but they're the only group on the political right in which majority favors legal abortion and say marijuana should be legal for recreational and medical use. It's funny, because I don't agree with the abortion part, but I do agree with the marijuana stuff, but I hate weed. They also are distinct in their views about Donald Trump. While a majority voted for him in 2020, most say they would prefer he not continue to be the major political figure. The only typology group without a clear partisan orientation, the stressed sideliners, also is the group with the lowest level of political engagement. Stress sideliners, who make up about 15% of the public, but constituted just 10% of voters in 2020, have a mix of conservative and liberal views, but largely defined by their minimal interest in politics. Here are the main findings in the new political typology. Racial injustice remains the dividing line in U.S. politics. As you could see, basically, all the right don't really care about it, and then the left are pretty hardcore in how they care about it. So if you're just listening, there's a dark gold bar that says, because they are fundamentally biased against some racial and ethnic groups, most U.S. laws and institutions need to be completely rebuilt. Then there's a lighter gold that says, while there are many inequities in laws and in institutions, necessary change can be made by working within the systems, and then little or nothing needs to be done. So the progressive left is all about everything needs to be rebuilt. The establishment liberals are a small degree. It's like 30, 30, 40. So the establishment liberals want it to be rebuilt, or they think little or nothing needs to be done. But for the most part, they say that they can kind of work with what they got. The Democratic mainstays are kind of split between everything needs to be rebuilt, and they can work what they got. And then the smallest faction of that would be like 20% would be little or nothing needs to be done. The outsider left says that everything needs to be torn down and rebuilt. And then about 25% say that they can kind of work with what they got. And then if you go down to the stress sideliners and all of the right, they don't really care about racial issues. Among GOP-oriented groups, divide in views of economic policy. This is all really interesting. I'll have to make sure I put this in the link, or yeah, in the links below, because I find this stuff to be pretty fascinating. Among GOP-oriented groups, divide in views of business and taxes on the wealthy. So here they ask people, business corporations make too much profit and taxes on household income over $400,000 should be raised. Pretty much most of the right-wing groups are kind of like, we don't really care. The ambivalent right, if I'm reading this correctly, say that corporations make too much profit, which I know it's kind of like a leftist thing, but I kind of agree, because I think most libertarians kind of agree that like they wouldn't be making this much money. There wouldn't be so much wealth inequality. And not that I'm worried about the wealth inequality by itself. It's more the fact that they're getting handouts and it's a rigged game at the behest of the government. And I think that's where like a lot of the populist right kind of brings a lot of this stuff up. So I'm not going to read what they kind of comment on this stuff, but I just find that these graphs are really interesting. Obviously, a lot of the left think that like the taxes should be raised for people who make over $400,000, and then business and corporations make too much profit. The left wingers are pretty much all in agreement that everything like that is kind of a big deal and like is wrong. So groups in the ideological middle show lower levels of engagement in politics. So I want to make sure I read. Is there a middle in politics today? This is kind of all over the place. Yeah, and I think that's about it for this article. So yeah, these are just like some notes about how people identify politically and then like how they think about these issues when it comes to politics today. And I guess I should kind of finish this off with like, do labels matter? I don't know. Do they? If you're engaging with somebody, is it helpful to identify as, you know, what you really believe, or is it better to just kind of like talk to them as a person and then work from there? Personally, I don't walk up to people and beat my chest and say, I'm a libertarian. This is what I believe. You should believe it too. I think that's ridiculous. I think you're going to turn people off if you just run up to them and shove your fist in their face and tell them this is what they should believe. That doesn't work for anybody. And I think you push away more people than you bring in. When you build what I call relationship capital, which is where like you have a sustained friendship and you talk to these people about nuanced topics and you just have a friendship with these people over a period of time, I think you're more likely to be able to make inroads that way rather than being hostile. So like there was, I know I shared it and a whole bunch of people were talking about it on Twitter, but where Nick Fuentes and his boys were all kicked out of the, what the fuck was it? Turning Point USA. Was it because of their criticisms of Israel, or was it because they were actively hostile to all that crew, and that generally they're kind of insufferable assholes? I could be convinced either way, honestly, but if you had to pin me down, I would almost lean towards it's probably because they're insufferable assholes. Let's be honest. I do think there is an Israel component to that, but I think it's a little bit both. If you are an insufferable asshole and you're actively hostile to a group and then you want to approach that group for them to give you publicity, why would you be surprised that they don't want you there? So I don't know. This was kind of all over the place. I hope you guys enjoyed. GMJ Forte, I hope you're doing well, brother, as always. Yeah, I know I was a little bit all over the place, but I'm going to see if I can turn on my redirects. Give me a minute here. So if you're watching, make sure you go to Jack Napier's channel. I shared it. If you go to the community tab, it should be there. Shout out to my channel members as well. So if you're listening to this live, please, 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 please consider becoming a channel member for the lowly price of $2.99 a month. That is half. People always like to bring up Starbucks coffees. That is half the price of a Starbucks coffee for a month. You can get access to all of the Common Crowns footage that I have, as well as some early videos that I'll try to develop. And then I'm thinking about doing like hangouts after the show to kind of, you know, just give people some bang for their buck. Hey, there's the man himself. What's up, man? Good to see you, Brandon. Hope you're doing well. But yeah, consider becoming a member of the channel for $2.99 a month so I can afford to continue to do this stuff, this whole board here that I just got. Wasn't that much, but I appreciate all the financial support and everybody listening. Speaking of Brandon, make sure you go check out acommoncrown.com. We have a couple shows coming up, and I think they're all going to be absolutely fantastic. I'm super excited to get out there and play again. This summer is going to be really, really cool. I thought this year was going to be a little bit of a lull for Common Crown, but I'm beginning to think it's not going to be. I think we're going to make a little bit of a bang this year, and the next year we're definitely going to be loud and proud, to say the least. We got Rock for Life coming up at the end of the month. Let me actually pull that up because I want to share this. Life. I should always put this in the description. Make sure you go to Rock for Life and donate as well. If you don't donate to me, donate to Rock for Life. A recipient this year is Ruthie. She, let me make sure I got this right. Basically, we do a charity show or a charity series of concerts where we send money to a child in need who our recipient this year is Ruthie. I believe she has some kind of leukemia. I read it on a show a couple weeks ago, but go to rockforlife.com. I think it's that. I should know this off the top of my head. Oh, rockforlifeconcert.com. Please go there. They have the support and all that where we donate to kids in need, kids who are sick and need the help. I've met all the recipients and we always, you know, it's just always a good time. So if you can't make it to one of the shows, then feel free to donate. Become a channel member. Shout out to Abrogate These and Alex Patina, I think it is, who became channel members and they've been supporting me. This week I have David Patrick Harry on, and that will be a really, really cool show. 5:30 Eastern time, Wednesday, 5 till midnight tomorrow at 8 PM Eastern time, A Common Crown Rock for Life on the 28th. We'll be opening for Hinder on the 30th. And then, next month we're doing Drowning Pool. And then in August we're doing a show with Flaw. So, schedule's pretty low, but definitely some cool shows coming up. So if you guys don't got anything else, make sure you hit all the links below, subscribe, become a channel member and support me. Go to tigerfitness.com where they have a little bit of a sale if you want to get all your supplements, get all your, you know, jacked and tan and that good stuff. And follow Jack Napier. I'll be on there at 11 o'clock and we're going to talk about our dads and stuff like that. So happy Father's Day. Have a great week, everybody. And thank you so much and take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.